Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Welcome to the Fantasy Throwdown Podcast, bringing you the latest updates from the world of sports, gambling, and pop culture. Because you can't have a show without hot takes or a Tiger King meme these days. Know what I'm saying? Now, with over 200 episodes and ready to get after it again, here's your host, Dwayne Callender.
Good morning, everybody. It is Sunday morning and plenty to talk about for the NFL, so let's get right down to it. We had the Saturday games on the slate yesterday for the divisional round, and, you know, let's just get settled up in terms of a recap in case you missed it. The Rams lost to the Packers, no surprise. The biggest issue for the Rams was Aaron Donald was truly hurt with the rib injury, really was a non-factor in the entire game. He left like right in the middle of the second quarter, and the Rams defense clearly was impacted by it because they got zero pressure on Aaron Rodgers. And more importantly, the Packers run game was just able to take off. I mean, they were just gashes. And if Green Bay is able to run the ball on you, you're pretty much done. Like, the way to beat the Packers is you stop the run and you force Aaron Rodgers to have to throw the ball. And I know that sounds crazy that you would say, yeah, you want Aaron Rodgers throwing the ball around, but truly, you actually do want the Packers chucking the ball around, because I talked about this before, and, you know, it won't be reflected in the score, but the Rams secondary, even though they gave up passing touchdowns, they held their own against the Packers wide receiver core. Davante Adams put up numbers, which he usually does, but, you know, clever design play at the goal line to get the touchdown. I mean, he had catches in the field, but he wasn't actually shredding the Rams defense. You know, yeah, they were able to make some design plays to get him the ball, but realistically, Davante Adams wasn't really dominating the Rams secondary. Jalen Ramsey was doing a good job on him for the most part. And by and large, when Aaron Rodgers was taking deep shots, Alan Lazard and, Montez Valdez-Scantling, again, just coming up small when he's called upon. But Lazard got the big touchdown catch to break it open on a 48-yard touchdown pass. You know, corner and the safety both bit hard on the play action. And again, this is what I was talking about. If the Packers are able to run, it sets up the play action. So that play only happens because they bit on the play action, because they were running the ball so effectively. I mean, if you look at it objectively, you know, the Packers passing attack really did not have that dominant of a game, but because the running attack was so dominant and the Rams could not win the line of scrimmage whatsoever with Aaron Donald out of the lineup, you know, Aaron Jones was able to eat. You know, he didn't have 100-plus yards rushing, but they were just able to control drives, just keep the clock running. And, you know, the Rams offense is just so inept with Jared Goff at under center. You know, I said this before, like, I didn't see a way for the Rams to crack 20 points unless there was a defensive turnover and, you know, the Rams secondary missed some opportunities to pick off Aaron Rodgers. Rodgers tried to take some deep shots over the top against the Rams secondary. There were a couple of plays that could have picked them off. They missed some opportunities in the end zone that could have affected the outcome of the game. But, you know, they were struggling to make a defensive play to kind of counteract it, because the Rams offense just kept going three and out multiple times. they only put together like three sustained drives, and it was just McVay play calling against the Packers defense. Jared Goff cannot run an offense improv. It has to be spoon-fed to him by McVay, and McVay has to get every single aspect of what the Packers are trying to do right, or any other defense for that matter, in order for Goff to succeed. I mean, it's kind of an insult to game managers to call Jared Goff a game manager, because game managers can still find ways of getting the sticks moving. Goff just ain't that dude, and he's being paid as though he's one of the top half starters in the league. I mean, he's actually being paid as a top 10 QB. He's not even close to that right now. So the Rams have to make a decision, I think, in the draft of, can they identify someone who can take over the QB duties in a year or two? Because the Rams are going to have to make some salary considerations in about in that same time frame and within 2 years. And because, they had Cam Akers fall into their lap to replace Gurley. And Akers is going to be that guy moving forward. But man, oh man, like Sean McVay, you know, I got to think that McVay's got to be looking at this and thinking long term, can I seriously keep coming up with game plans to stump defenses all the time? Because I don't know if Goff is ever going to be good enough to elevate beyond what I feed him at the line of scrimmage every time. It really was glaring how much that game was predicated on McVay being able to make the right play call at the right time and Goff not being able to recognize what the Packers were doing at the line of scrimmage. There's just no getting around it, and no Cooper Kupp certainly hurt, but Goff basically had to make more plays. They got a couple of plays there for Van Jefferson and Reynolds, but realistically, they can't find ways of generating offense unless it's a clever play design. And that only gets you so far unless you can truly dominate teams running the football. And Akers did his job. I mean, that's the frustrating part about watching the Rams play. If they can't get themselves into a third and short situation, Goff can't figure out a way of getting a first down. And when you have that upper tier quarterback, they can find ways of getting first downs, even if it's third and long. And that's just not Goff's game. He cannot do it. Even once he can't do it. And that's the thing that is troubling, because at this stage in his career, Goff actually needs to be able to make some of those plays. It's not as though he can't scramble. He has some athleticism. Like, he just doesn't have the instincts to make plays. And that's the troubling part about all of this, to be perfectly frank. And then, like I said, on the Packers side, that was about as business professional as it gets. So it just turned into a kind of a sequence where, the Packers try to do their deep shots, but the Rams were holding up. It was just the fact that over time, the attrition of the play action, that's what eventually softened up the Rams defense. And that was all she wrote, because the Rams offense was not going to get there. The Rams defense had to make some plays, and they started gambling later on in the game. So that gets us to the Saturday night game. And, maybe I should have factored this into more in the decision-making process. But man, the wind in Buffalo was bad. I mean, it was high winds, but you can have high winds in Buffalo at times, but it was swirling winds. And that is the worst condition, because you watch the facial expressions of Justin Tucker, the kicker of the Ravens, and you see like he's gauging the wind and it's flipping like within 10 seconds. So even if you think you've got the kick lined up, the balls start going swirling in a different direction. And so what should be a routine kick just turns into off the upright. So Al Michaels was just jinxing Justin Tucker left and right last night. But, the facial expressions were priceless. But you know, I should have thought about the wind a little bit more in terms of the roster build, but I told you guys this before. Number one wide receivers are difference makers, and you can see what a number one wide receiver can do for a team, because Davante Adams finds ways to get himself open. He will find a way to, if a pocket's a space, look for him, he will get there. You watched that game last night with the Ravens and Bills. Lamar Jackson is actually creating time and space for his receivers to get open. They can't get there. Like Hollywood Brown, Mark Andrews, they are not getting separation. And yeah, Lamar could try to throw into pockets of space to get there. But realistically, if you're forcing Lamar to throw into tight windows, yeah, he can do it, but he's not going to be able to do it effectively. And that's the a key problem with the Ravens in general as an offense. They can find themselves in bad situations, and I thought they were a little banged up heading into this game, and it kind of showed because, you know, Lamar got knocked out of the game, but he didn't look all that, he didn't look too spry in the first half either, and, you know, they couldn't get the run game going with Dobbins. They just had a lot of difficulty, you know. Even though they ran the ball against the Bills, they weren't eating up, they weren't breaking off huge runs. They weren't blowing up holes during the game. And that's where, you know, Buffalo's not that great of a run defense. They just did not really have much in the way of a punch. And, you know, it showed. I mean, you score 3 points in the game, like something is off. I mean, the Ravens ran for 150 yards, but I kind of told you this from the outset. The Ravens basically needed to have close to, I figured 400 yards, 350 to 400 yards of offense and be able to control clock. The Bills were struggling mightily with the wind. Josh Allen could not hit anyone. Josh Allen had 37 pass attempts and only had 206 yards passing. It was one of it was actually the Josh Allen of last year, just missing receivers left and right. He missed Stephon Diggs twice. Like, Stephon Diggs had 8 catches for 106 yards, and he easily, if Josh Allen hits him where he was supposed to, Stephon Diggs clears $1.50 easily. Easily. Stephon Diggs just dominated the Ravens secondary as I thought he would. It's just that Allen could not manage with the wind, but like I said, Diggs was able to get open in spaces, and even with a fluttering ball that the Ravens were struggling with, dealing with the wind, if you have a number one wide receiver, they can find ways of getting open. Now, people are going to complain about the deep throws. Both QBs were missing receivers open in stride. It's not just Lamar. The wind was playing, having issues with deep balls all night long. But, you know, it's one of those situations where I kind of look at it as this. The Ravens, you know, they could say that they had a successful year, but realistically, it's showing the limitations of that offense. I don't see, if you're telling me that Mark Andrews is a top tight end, he's got to be able to have more of an impact on that game. I mean, he had 11 targets yesterday, but he only had 4 catches for 28 yards. He had no separation. And when you're talking about the Kelce's and the George Kittle's of the world, they find ways of getting themselves open. I don't consider Mark Andrews in that tier. I just don't. It's like I keep seeing it because I saw this play out throughout the regular season. Like, Andrews was not getting separation, And Hollywood Brown, Marquise Brown, you know, he's a burner, but, you know, if you give him intermediate routes, he does not find ways of getting himself open. Now, was he open on the critical play where Lamar threw the pick six in the end zone that got ran all the way back for a touchdown that swung the game for the Bills? Yes. If Lamar spots Hollywood Brown, that's a touchdown. Here's the problem. Jerry Hughes got the pressure on Lamar, and, you know, Lamar could not did not see Hollywood Brown. He was locked in on I believe that play was targeting Andrews, who was covered, by the way. It's not as though Trey Johnson, when he drifted back in, was the only thing stopping that from being a touchdown. Mark Andrews was tightly covered. Lamar just locked in on him because he figures everyone is in tight coverage. I might as well throw to Andrews because he has the biggest body to try to body someone out of the way, which isn't the way you should be thinking about the offensive plays. But if you watch the game, that entire game, no one really had much of a step in terms of the Ravens wide receiver core. So that's how, as a QB, you start, your mind starts playing tricks on you that, man, I don't really have anyone that's getting open. Let's push the envelope towards this guy because maybe he might be able to get something going. And that's where Lamar was pressing. And you can see him pressing. You're like, not making excuses, but the Ravens have to get a number one wide receiver this offseason. By hook or by crook, if they have to pay a lot of money to get Kenny Golladay in there, so be it. But realistically, the Ravens need a number one wide receiver in the worst way possible. Because what they've got there right now is not going to be enough to get into the World Series as at this stage. You know, folks have been trying to say that Baltimore can find a way to get it done without having a true legitimate wide receiver in there. But teams have caught on to Greg Roman's scheme with the Ravens. And as good as Lamar can be at times, I think you have to be able to find multiple ways of winning in the postseason, and the Ravens don't have it at the moment. They really rely on Lamar to figure out a way of getting it done, and they just weren't able to get it done last night. It's just that straightforward. So the way I kind of see today's matchups going, you know, I mean, let's just talk about it. From a DFS perspective, the Chiefs, Browns, and, you know, we talked about this yesterday. Chiefs are going to put up points against the Browns. I don't see a scenario where the Browns defense, with their secondary issues, and we saw Big Ben Roethlisberger, even though they were down, being able to chew up that secondary in the second half last Sunday. So I just think it's disingenuous to say that, you know, the Browns secondary is going to be able to shut down Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce. I think those guys are going to get theirs. The question becomes, are the Chiefs going to get up on them early, or are the Browns going to be able to keep it close? And you have to be able to make that determination because it depends on how you want to build out your roster. If you think the Chiefs get on them early, then that means the Browns are going to be playing from behind, and it favors more of a Baker Mayfield type of build where you can get a Kelce and a Tyreek Hill and then run it back with Jarvis Landry and maybe an Austin Hooper, but you're able to fit in both Tyreek Hill and Kelce. If you're just going with, you know, the build that the Browns stay in it all the way through, then you're assuming, Nick Chubb is going to get it going. And if you're playing Chubb, it makes it harder to play Baker because you're just not going to get that many pass attempts if Chubb's going strong and going about it that way. It's almost better if you were, if Chubb's going, they're going to keep feeding Chubb the rock and then do some dump offs to Kareem Hunt, but also give Hunt some carries as well. And you fade the passing game for the Browns completely and just go with the Chiefs' passing attack with either Hill or Kelce as the run back. Because I think in this second game with the Saints and Tampa Bay, you're still going to see points. So from a salary construction standpoint, if we go back to yesterday's episode, what I talked about is the fact that Mahomes is so much more expensive than everyone else because Mahomes is still going to run you north of Mahomes is down to 7,900 for the Sunday only slate. If you're still doing a two game slate, he's 8K. So the truth of the matter is that, you know, Mahomes, even at 7,900, is still so much more expensive than everyone else that if you play Chubb, I think you're almost obligated to have to fit in a DeMarcus Robinson if you want to play more aspects of the Cleveland passing attack. See, the other way of going about this is you could play Mahomes and play a cheap receiver to make it work. I just don't like either Robinson or Hardman in that regard, but you could certainly do it. Now, Robinson dropped from 4.3K to 3.6K. And that actually makes it a more palatable play for the Sunday only slate because now you can actually, you don't have to go to a Deontay Harris in the second game. You can go to, more aspects of the Chiefs passing attack. So that's the kind of way you have to look at it is going at it from the viewpoint of where can I get value? If I'm playing Mahomes, I'm going to have to go cheap somewhere in the Chiefs passing attack to make it worthwhile. Beforehand, when you were building out the four game slate and had Mahomes, you were stuck with basically playing Deontay Harris in most regards to make the math work. Now at 7.9, you can naturally get Marcus Robinson in the mix and have Tyreek Hill or Kelce in the roster construction with some other pieces of the Cleveland game. The other aspect that I don't think folks are going to be looking at is I think, like I said, there are points to be had in the second game. But if you're just doing one lineup, I would still focus on the Chiefs-Browns game. If you're not playing more than five lineups, I would still say focus on the Chiefs-Browns game if you're doing the Sunday-only slate. But if you're willing to take a little bit more risk, I definitely think that there's grounds to be playing Brady at 6.3K at QB because you got an opportunity to play Antonio Brown at 5.1. You got Godwin at 5.7K and Michael Thomas as a run back at 6.6. They all had price decreases. So you can make the math work and still be able to get in a Chubb, and you can get in Chubb, you can get in Alvin Kamara with Brady lineups. There are ways to get it done. I'm just saying that in terms of variety of construction, it makes sense to have exposure to the Saints Buccaneers game, because that one could actually shoot out. There's a chance the Chiefs game doesn't shoot out, and it involves the Cleveland being able to run out the game with Chubb. But the teams that were able to do that against the Chiefs, and best example being Oakland, yeah, Oakland was able to run the game, run the ball, but both Kelce and Tyreek Hill got there. If you look at the game logs for Kelce and Tyreek Hill, Kelce had eight catches both games against the Raiders, put up over 25 fantasy points on DraftKings, and Tyreek put up over 24 DraftKings points in both contests against the Raiders and had a 30-point game. So both Kelce and Hill should be able to get there with a secondary that has the injuries that the Browns do. I just look at it from that standpoint. The build you should consider having is the fact that Kelce and Tyreek Hill are in there. As it stands, it doesn't look like Clyde Edwards-Helaire is going to make the game today. So with him being out, it makes it a lot harder to see how the Chiefs get away from running, throwing the ball against the Bengals front. I just have a very tough time seeing how the Chiefs get away from throwing it around. So to me, the build is still leaning towards, if you're only doing a couple of lineups, you're still playing the Chiefs-Browns game. I'm just saying you got to keep an open mind about the second game where you can play an Antonio Brown, or you drop down from Mahomes to Brady, because Brady's passing options in Tampa, he should be able to put up points. And you may be able to see in large-scale tournaments someone win with someone other than Mahomes as their QB. So that's the thought process you should be going through, is how do the game scripts flow in terms of winning the playoff matchups, of what's likely and how much you want to commit to that particular take, because that's the difference. I think 9.5 points is too big of a spread for the Browns. I think the Chiefs win the game, but I think that's just too big of a spread. So I think Baker Mayfield lineups are very viable today in DFS. That's just my opinion. In terms of the Buccaneers-Saints game, you know, the Saints won both matchups in the regular season, and they won them pretty handily. It's not as though it was fluke victories. Like, they did handle the Bucs, but I think the Bucs are still the better team. And I still have deep reservations about Drew Brees. It still seems unlikely that we're getting Taysom Hill to differentiate that Saints attack. Maybe he plays, but it's still very much up in the air, like how effective he can be if he hasn't even practiced this week, hasn't taken snaps. You know, it makes it a lot harder to pull the trigger on that to be used as anything other than a decoy. And so, realistically, the biggest detriment to the Saints is Drew Brees. I keep saying this. If the Saints had switched over to Jameis Winston when Brees got hurt initially, I think the Saints probably go on to win the Super Bowl. As crazy as that may sound to folks, not taking KC, I think if you gave Jameis Winston the weapons that Drew Brees has on the Saints and allowed him to actually run the offense, yeah, he could turn the ball over. But when you have the talent there's a possibility that Jameis was still going to be able to put up big numbers in turnover-prone games. I'm just saying. The issue with Breeze is he loses arm strength as the season goes along, and from game to game, if he doesn't have it, he doesn't get it back during the game. It's either he has it or he doesn't, and if he doesn't show up today early, what do the Saints do? You throw in a cold Jameis Winston at QB? No, they're going to ride Drew Brees all the way to a loss. And maybe they put in Taysom if he can suit up. But like I said, no practice time. It just doesn't look to me like a situation where the Saints come away with a win here. The momentum is, to me, is pointing towards Tampa Bay. And I know what Brady's going to bring to the table. So, to me, it's just pretty clear that I see Tampa winning this. And if you're giving me if you're giving me points as a 2.5 point underdog, I'm still taking Tampa. So, that's the kind of way I'm viewing these matchups. Again, you just have to kind of bear out what you think the true game script is going to be for how you think the games are going to go and how you're going to build out your DFS rosters. That's what it's going to come down to. But, it's one of those things that, as I said, you need to be mindful of how you want to approach approach your builds and be confident in terms of your takes, because realistically trying to spread out every piece of every game may not necessarily be the way to go about it for this two game slate, because there's just so many options on both squads to get there. I just think that the best way of going about it is fading Drew Brees at the QB spot and going with any other option at QB is the starting point, and then figure out where your roster construction goes from there. So that does it for me. Good luck with your lineups, and enjoy the games.
Thanks for listening to the Fantasy Throwdown Podcast. Be sure to like and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and all other major outlets.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.